Hey everybody, welcome to Little Monsters Movie Podcast.
What's going on? What's up?
Creature from the Black Lagoon, 1954, Universals. Yes. We're going back, we're doing something old school.
Yes, I think we're going to do a Universal run now.
Yes.
You guys and that Jason and that Freddy, you know, Friday the 13th, I mean.
I was going to do part 6, but we said, we kind of like crawled under the covers and
it's
like
giving me diarrhea, guys. I can't do it. I can't.
No, I couldn't do it either.
You guys that like those movies. It was enough.
I had enough of it. So, Creature from the Black Lagoon.
Right.
And I tell you, we were going to do a full commentary on this movie.
Right.
But
actually, I'd like to say we almost did a full commentary on this movie.
We just got done doing a full commentary on this movie.
Hour and 10 minutes before.
And the microphone was unplugged again. We did this a couple times in a year and a half.
Yes, I think this is only the second time this has happened.
I think it's the third.
That's it. You're out.
I think it's the third time. And we were an hour and 10 minutes into this. And I looked over and I saw the microphone was not plugged in. And I nearly went and punched a hole in the wall. Even though it's cement.
And then we sit here for 10 minutes. What are we going to do? What are we going to do?
So we're just going to talk about the movie and what we think about it, a little bit of backstory.
Well, we know it by heart.
More of a movie review than a commentary this week. So
I think it's just going to be like a fan gush for like 15, 20 minutes. Us talking about how much we love.
So it's a little different than usual.
Some of you might actually watch the whole thing this time.
Yeah, maybe.
So I think we're going to do maybe a little Universal run or something.
Yeah, we will. I think so.
They started these films in the late 1920s with Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Yeah, you go back a little farther.
With Phantom of the Opera. That's where they really started.
Yeah.
And then the first talkie was Dracula, one of the first talkie films.
Mm-hmm.
And around the 1940s with all the sequels.
And this is where you really,
And
40 and on, you kind of really hit that, you know, big Universal with, you know,
Frankenstein meets the Wolf, Dracula's Daughter, all the Mummy sequels.
And you were going into Creature from the Black Lagoon was that period when you kind of started seeing the transformation from monsters into more science fiction kind of thing going on. I think, like we were talking about earlier, it kind of transitioned into more sci-fi, aliens, UFOs, but the creatures were more like
giant bugs,
a lot insects,
of giant bugs.
You know, them, stuff like that. So, there was a big difference in this, but the main thing in this movie and a lot of the movies back then were the whole scientific side of it. You know,
right, we were talking
they had to explain everything, like in A Creature from the Black Lagoon. When the diver takes and dives down in his aqua lung, you know, you would, the scientists would have to, and the scientist in this, who you would think would know, goes, why is he down there so long? Why is he
up so slowly?
Why does he stop a few feet up? Because of the pressure and stuff like that, tremors, whatever, you know.
So it's usually two scientists explaining things to each other, but it's for your benefit.
Exactly.
And
that's what they...
Black Lagoon's got that, too.
Yes. And not as much in this one as a lot of the later 50s, early 60s, when they really got into the, like, nuclear age kind of thing, when they started going into dropping, you know, the bombs and sci-fi and space and getting into space. So they really delve into... You know, why and what. They actually, in here, they do the uranium lead test.
Should we look that up? Is that a thing?
No, it is. Yes. It's like the carbon dating.
Okay.
It's dating the how old the rock and the arche, you know.
So they did try to keep it accurate.
Yeah, no. It's, you know. But they didn't do a whole lot of it in this. It was mostly in the Creature from the Black Lagoon. It was mostly the diving that they really hit hard on. Don't ask me why, but, and, you know, the carbon dating, the uranium, but other than that, what happens at the beginning? I mean,
the whole story, basically in a nutshell, is a scientist in the Amazon is digging for some artifacts, and he comes across a claw.
Really cool-looking claw that's like,
sticking
out of the rock.
And he recruits a few of his friends, trying to figure out what it is.
And we do have to say that there was the scientist there who was doing it. He's got to be an archaeologist. He's digging into rocks. But anyways,
I guess.
The tribesmen who are helping him look like Mo.
Yeah, Mo Howard from
they
the
all
Stooges.
Got like bow haircuts, black, and you know, oh, Mo's
right.
Like, so you know, whether they're, I don't know what they were, some Amazonian tribe that's
right.
helping the science out. And, but it was funny.
They get an expedition together to try to find the rest of the skeleton,
yeah.
or the fossil, I should say, and end up discovering that there's a living specimen still alive in this Amazon basin, this Black Lagoon.
Yes.
And hijinks ensue. And they find that this creature's a bit stronger and a bit more intelligent than they probably realized.
Yeah.
And through all the course of events that happens that we'll talk a little bit about. I got to say, at least, you know, my first experience with this film is right here with this man. I think for a while I'm going to keep him here next to me.
Oh, yeah. Super host.
Super host.
Super
Marty
host.
Sullivan. This is a, he was a Cleveland, you know, worked in television reporting.
Host. Who
and,
did, yeah.
Saturday afternoons, he would do, you know, Soups On with Super Host. And what he would usually do, and I've mentioned this a few times, he would show a couple of monster movies with like Little Rascals, Laurel and Hardy, Three Stooges, Bugs Bunny cartoons in between.
Yep.
They would do little skits, stuff like that. So he wasn't a late night horror movie host.
No,
he was
no.
a Saturday afternoon guy.
Yeah.
All right.
Which made him a little different than most of the horror hosts or even.
I didn't go outside on Saturdays.
No, I didn't either. I would sit.
You know,
when Superhost was coming on, I was at the TV watching.
Yep. Monster movies. This is where I first got exposed to the
science
Universals.
Fiction, yeah.
Hammer films, the old 50s sci-fi, them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like we were talking about. Godzilla films. You know, it was always. I remember one time he even showed, and it's taken me a while to try to track it down. I remember like these dubbed Japanese vampire movies.
Yes.
And
what was that called?
It was Lake of Blood. I think it's called Lake of Blood. But I did manage to find out what it was, and
that's went a little bit towards the later. He had to start playing the more
cheaper
versions of movies and stuff
like
that.
The station, you know, is this kind of thing fell out of favor with VCRs and cable. You know, his time slot, which used to be like 4 hours, was cut. You know, cut a little bit more, and then finally towards the end, all he did was show like Three Stooges.
Yeah,
and maybe a few of his little skits in between.
That's
and
about
that
it.
It.
Yeah.
He's still alive. He's retired. I believe he lives in Washington State, Marty Sullivan. And but if you go on YouTube, if you live anywhere else in the country besides Cleveland,
look up Superhost.
You can look up Superhost, and I think there's it's maybe about a 15-minute clip or so, and he was showing Frankenstein, the original Frankenstein that day, and it's all of like his little bumpers in between, and.
Yeah.
You know, he would talk about what was going on in town and things like that. So I just got to throw a little shout out to Superhost because it really was
our memories.
Since we started doing this podcast, I guess I just didn't realize how important this guy was to exposing me to so many of the movies that I still like now are because, that's what he showed on his program.
Yeah.
And, then we had Big Chuck Little John at Night. That was for. They usually showed, like, regular movies. They would show science fiction movies, but they would even show, like, The Terminator.
Oh, yeah,
something
they would
like
show different.
Their skits are what, I would watch them for.
Oh, Big Chuck and Little John? Yeah, yeah.
It was the skits that were gold. And they still do a program every Sunday night at 11:30, and it's just a half hour of their classic skits, and I still record it.
Oh, you can look you can look up Big Chuck and Little John on YouTube, and there's tons of skits.
They have their own. I think they have their own channel on there, right? With a bunch of their skits.
Yeah, and they
are website with tons
funny.
Of DVD. Yeah, great.
This
stuff.
That's what we grew up on.
Some are very
great.
Creative, and if you're not from around this Cleveland area, there's plenty of skits up there called the Certain Ethnic, whatever.
Yeah.
Anytime you see Certain Ethnic, just insert Polish. Okay. they didn't want them to say that on TV here
because
we have a pretty large Polish community here. And so anytime you see a skit that says a certain ethnic whatever, just Polish.
Big Chuck and Little John.
His
yep.
character.
Yeah.
But
from Parma, Ohio.
Yeah. He used to live not too far from my high school where I grew up. Now he lives
big
out in
Polish
now.
Community over there, yeah.
But getting back to the Universals, Creature 1954 released in 3D, real 3D. I had the opportunity with my daughter to go see it last year at a revival for a weekend, and the 3D was really cool, especially
went
the underwater.
Went to a revival,
scenes, whatever it was called,
the church revival.
Not that kind of revival. Oh, they brought. The
I thought
movie
you were being.
They revived the movie.
Being taken in by a cult.
Well, I know it's only happened twice. It's not going to happen again.
Okay.
And it was just really cool to see it in the real 3D, the underwater scenes, of which there's like 20 minutes in this movie. A lot of underwater scenes, and some of them are stunning, especially the ones with the creature.
Oh, yeah. The visual effects in this movie is awesome.
We have to talk about the costume. The costume that they use for the creature is amazing.
It wasn't just a full body suit or nothing like that.
Which is typical of that time period.
Right.
Slap a rubber suit on the guy
and zip him up. You know?
Right, where you can see the zipper. Not so here.
Yeah, they. How would they do it?
Pieces of scales put on piece by piece at a time.
And he'd be in it all day long.
And it's even got some great details that you would see later in the film where the gills actually work. They didn't have to do that.
No, yeah. I mean, you can actually see him. They throw out lungfish in this movie to compare him, you know, as... You know, species kind of hit a dead end, and they'll last that way a million. You know, they try to get on land to breathe, but it didn't. You know, they didn't make it. So the lungfish lasts forever. You know, I mean, millions of years forever. What am I talking about?
Forever.
I'm a little thrown off now, but anyways, the creature, he'll do this like breathing thing when he's out of water, like where, and his gills
and
would come out.
And the gills will expand out.
And you even talked about when he's in the water.
Right.
He would hold his breath.
The actor had to hold his breath for up to 4 minutes because, I mean, you see bubbles underwater when you move and things.
Right.
But you don't if he was an actor and there was like oxygen tubes and stuff in there, you would see the exhalation of the bubbles, like the scuba divers.
Yes.
But because he's holding his breath during like the swimming scenes and things like that, watch like the swimming scenes with the female actress in this movie. Julia Adams plays a
K.
Very, very pretty,
very
actress.
Beautiful. Yeah, I was. And, she's stunning. Yeah,
and,
need I say more?
You don't
bathing suit. Back then, it was called a bathing suit.
Well, we can almost even get to that. They get to the Black Lagoon in search of the fossil.
Yeah,
and before they even realize that there's a living specimen in that lagoon, Kay goes for a swim, and this is probably the classic scene in the film.
Yes.
Where she's swimming, the creature gets
well,
his
let's
first
tell them,
view
let's
of
tell
her.
Them why, though. They dig for 8 days, you know, at the archaeological site to get
find
the rocks.
Nothing.
Find nothing.
No more of the fossil that they found at the beginning.
Right. You know, the hand's there, but the body isn't. So they kind of think, you know, Dave comes up and talks about how there's, you know, the conversation ensues where there's a black lagoon down at the end.
Like
of
maybe
the,
erosion has you know, caused it to wash away into this lagoon. Where
so they go all the whole ship, you know, Rita and the captain and the all them. You know, they go down there and they're going to pick up rocks to carbon date them, or whatever.
The lead uranium lead test
to see if it you know
if they match
the same date you know period. So. They go down after they dive down and get the rocks and stuff, and you'll see the creature does see them and stuff.
Right,
but pokes.
He does notice
and it
the
is
divers.
Cool how the creature goes down behind the seaweed.
So many, it's just so many,
so
cool
many
scenes
times.
Of the foliage just waving back and forth and his face there.
Yeah, but they all go down in the ship, and she decides to take a dive overboard and go swimming in this water.
And not tell anybody.
So, very...
And, you know, it's a 1950s movie, and you know the bathing suit was—it's not the most revealing thing, but it shows a little bit of hip, which was
a little risque,
you know, for the time. You got to put this in perspective of the time. And sometimes but sometimes less is more. I mean, you know, and yeah, it's such a beautiful scene when she's swimming, the gill man sees her, and he's almost matching her movement. It's almost like a ballet underwater.
Yeah, like a synchronized swimming type thing
exactly.
going on.
She's
you know?
Swimming, you know, going like this, and he's underneath watching
and
her.
And it's kind of like a Jaws thing, where the camera's up from underneath, and you see her, like, swimming.
Oh, that's total. They made Jaws, Jaws owes a debt to this film.
Oh, yeah.
Because exactly that scene where she's swimming on the water, almost seen the exact same shot as in Jaws.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
With
the
girl at the beginning of the film. Mm-hmm.
So. And he... swims up to her, and they, like you said, they kind of coincide.
Right, and she has no idea that he's there.
Swim together,
and it was done purposely to be sort of sensual
to get that attachment between the two.
Kay, well, or his attachment. She doesn't know he's there.
Well, she falls in love with him, and they have babies for part two. So I mean,
little frogs,
little frogs,
like Kermit. That's where Kermit came from.
Kermit the Frog.
Hello,
Miss Piggy. Fozzie Bear.
But he kind of backs off a little bit, and she does like these cool little flips in the water really, really nice. And and he gets close again. And he's never seen anything like her before. Yeah. And he's very, it's not like a love kind of thing, I don't think. He obviously desires her, but I don't think it's for like a love or sexual reason. It's just, I compared it to like King Kong and Fay Wray.
Yeah.
You know, King Kong doesn't necessarily, he's not necessarily in love with her.
It's he's intrigued and interested and then wants it because he's never seen nothing like this before. He's been in this lagoon, supposedly,
trying to touch
by himself.
Leg. You know, just a little...
Because there's no mommy or babies or nothing. I think we talked about this a little bit. Like, if he's the only one, how's that work?
You know, over a million years. He can be on land or sea, or I mean, or water. So
once a year...
Maybe he reproduces himself.
Well, not once a year, but maybe as
once a lifetime.
As he dies, he lays this big golden egg and buries it and then dies.
You know,
and then there's the new creature. But yeah, I don't understand.
Some amphibians do, you know, reproduce on their own. They're asexual, so.
But they reproduce many.
Well, he's big.
He's one creature over a million years.
Don't maybe.
But anyways.
Oh, maybe they're in the lagoon next over. Maybe that's where Harvey's at.
I can overlook it because I love the creature.
Exactly.
Gilman.
Exactly.
And there's a scene in this, too, once she does get back on the ship. I mean, he's kind of like wants her totally. I mean, you know, he's digging her. You know, he's wants to have some of that. But anyways,
he wants to have some. And how they find out that there's a live specimen is when she gets back on the boat. They had put a net out,
yeah,
just in case any other specimens of interesting fish would be there, because they're all these marine biologists.
Yeah,
and he gets the Gilman gets caught in that net, following her to the boat, and ends up tearing his way out of it, basically like tearing the whole winch down. But one of his claws gets stuck.
Ted
did
say wench.
Wench.
Yeah, stupid wench.
And they find the claw in the netting and match it to the fossil down there. And they realize, holy crap, there's a live one in there.
Yeah, because they carbon dated it. And it said, now.
Now. It's now.
This is real now. It's been alive. It's
now,
dripping green glue.
But, you know, there gets to be some drama in between some of the scientists, you know.
Dave and Mark have kind of they're button heads throughout kind of the whole movie.
David's the true scientist, you know, would rather just get photographic evidence of it.
Yeah.
Whereas Mark, who funded this expedition,
wants to shoot it and drag it home.
Right. I mean, I think live or dead, preferably dead.
Yep.
He'd like to bring it in.
He would.
And that's what he aims to do.
He aims to do it.
So, yeah, they go under the water, try to get pictures of it. Dave ends up shooting it. They do confront it.
Yeah.
Shoots it with a spear in the ass, and which doesn't really hurt him much.
No. But he does, the Gilman gets it quite a bit in here. I mean, whether you're talking, that, shotgun, what else does he get? I mean, he's...
Fire.
A lantern's thrown at him on the boat.
He comes up on the boat again, trying
doesn't
to...
Doesn't seem burned after. I mean, but
no,
Gil...
He jumped right in the water. That skin's got to be real tough.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, yeah.
But, he does get up on the boat again at night. Takes out one of the... He's going after Kay again.
One of the deckhands.
Yeah, the deckhands. And
Chico.
Even...
Or whoever.
And,
You must get killed by the Gil man. But yeah, he's...
And they get the captain of the ship gets the idea. I guess he's got some kind of poison on board.
You're the captain of my heart. Remember that song?
No. What was it? Is it Christopher Cross?
No. It's an 80s song. Oh. You're the captain of my heart.
I'm the captain of my heart.
We couldn't get another day for the captain of a heart.
I don't know.
Oh, well, anyways.
Too bad.
Yeah, it's a great song.
You're the 80s music man.
Gotcha. I'm the music man.
You are.
But anyways.
He gets the idea about that poison.
he's got a bag of white powder, cocaine, whatever.
He's got it in powder form. He ends up having it in liquid form.
Because they're trying to figure out how can they get this. And he's... He puts his hand in there and goes, oh, here it is right here. and basically they're going to sprinkle it around.
Sniffing it like a Hell's Angel.
They're going to sprinkle it around the whole lagoon.
And they,
to kill the, or not kill, but sedate, I think, the fish in this area, so they think...
But then they end up dropping the pellet form down there. And,
yeah, because...
Which goes against everything that they should be standing for. I mean, they're...
Right.
They're damaging all this aquatic life to get this gill man.
And what's the one scene you see set in here that kind of is environmental kind of?
I think it is very ecological. David and Mark, they're dropping these pellets from the rowboat into the water.
And Kay's up on the ship.
And she's having a cigarette. It's the only time you see her smoking in the whole film.
Yeah.
And she throws the cigarette into the water, into the lagoon. And it pans down and you see the gill man looking up. Now, you could say from one perspective he's looking at Kay.
Yeah.
But on the other perspective, maybe he's looking at what she's throwing into his habitat.
Yeah.
Because the very next scene fades and it comes up and there's all these dead fish all over the surface of the water.
Yeah.
So you know, I think there's a serious ecological message in there in a way. I think.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, it's after you said that and I've seen it, I'm like going, okay.
I mean, looking at it from the 50s standards, maybe. You know, it wasn't, but definitely if you watch it today, it's like, you know, I definitely, you know, see that maybe they were trying to do something like that.
Oh, and you wouldn't think that that would happen nowadays, but I mean, who knows, down in a third world country, you know.
First thing you think of is scientists someone throws it in a lagoon, you know, get that, pick that up.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, Phil, stop that habit altogether. But
So what happens is, the gill man eventually makes his way to the ship and pretty much attacks the doctor.
Right.
Who is Dr. Edwin Thompson?
Well, because they capture him. They do capture. They do manage to capture the gill man.
Yes.
And put him in a cage. He busts out of that cage.
Well, how do they capture him through?
He sedates. They follow him.
Yes, they eventually put it in some gun.
To like his lair.
Yeah. Into some gun that they shoot that powder stuff into him. And they keep shooting him. Eventually, I guess it sedates him enough to where they follow him in a cave. He comes out and he finally falls down after he tries to attack and grab Kay. And they throw him over. They take him to ship. He's in this big... wood, like bamboo crate type thing.
Yeah, I don't know. They must have just built that in like, you know, an hour or something.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah.
It looks like they just took vines and tied it. Yeah, no wonder he busted out.
This will hold them, you know, but yeah. Needless to say, and it's a cool scene where he's looking up.
Oh, yeah.
And just you see his eyes.
The
just...
eyes are different in the other movies, too. They change. They're more bulbous like a fish.
Yeah.
And that was because the way they are in the original film, the actor couldn't see nothing.
Yeah.
And, so they did that so the actor could see a little better.
Right.
But I think it takes away from the
look just of
that
the
dead
man,
stare that he gets. And there's so many cool scenes of just, you know, him under the water or in the cage.
Yeah.
But yeah, he busts out. He he messes up the doctor on the boat pretty
His
well.
His face, kind of. I mean, but.
Yeah, it scratches him all up. Yeah. We don't actually see that. That, you know, but later on in the movie, he's all wrapped up in bandages.
Yeah.
And he escapes again.
I like that scene where they're all up there and they...
Tries to catch him on fire, smashes the lantern on him. That's what we were saying.
Yes, yes.
And he jumps in the water on fire.
Yeah, so poor Gill Man. I mean, you know, he's just trying to get Kay, but...
Right. You know. Well, they decide to cut their losses after that.
Yeah.
And just, you know, get out of
there. Get out of there, yeah.
And I love, because the Gill Man, not only is he strong, he's also smart, we're going to find out.
Yes.
Because he has laid all kinds of... dead trees, logs, whatever, what have you, some bracken.
bracken.
And has,
I thought Ted said kraken.
Bracken. And he's blocked the exit into the tributary so that they can get back on the river.
Yeah.
He's and keeping them there.
And as the ship's going,
yeah.
They don't say, oh my God, look at what's, we're blocked 6 feet from it. So the ship's going, and say, oh my God, it's black. I didn't see that 50 feet away. I see it 6 feet away.
And it doesn't look like much.
No, it looks like a beaver piled up some stuff at the entrance or exit, whatever.
I don't know, fulcrum or whatever, you know.
Well, I was telling Ted, though, that this is the same captain who eventually became the Titanic captain. Iceberg, 6 feet away.
Oh, better turn left.
Better turn left. I drunk. No.
No, the other left.
Because how he didn't see this block this beyond me. But anyways, needless to say, it's okay. It's whatever.
And, so they're trying like hell
to
get this, you know, to use the lift that they have on the boat. The, what do you call it?
A wench, whatever.
Wench, yeah, wench. To get this you know, lift it up, and it's a no go. They can't get it up.
No, they can't get. Oh, you said can't get it up.
Can't get it up.
Well, you got to look more at K.
I know.
K is the pace of
so pretty. She is. And so,
I can't say bathing suit scene enough in here. If you like beauty, you know, stop, pause it, snap a picture, and hang it up on your wall.
You know, I mean, it's kind of graceful.
Old Hollywood, yeah.
Old Hollywood. I like that. Old Hollywood. So, and that's what I like. I like old Hollywood.
I like old Hollywood, and I like new Hollywood. What's up, girl? You biatch. Show me some of that. Oh,
yikes.
Maybe not.
What the? No, man.
Well, what? The Kardashians are getting implants on their ass, you know, whatever. Oh, yeah. Sorry, but I tried to keep this classy. But
that's all.
But yeah, what does he do? He tries to go down there and...
Yeah, he's under the water trying to get it. I mean, because actually, when you look, on the top, it doesn't look like much. But when he goes under the water,
it's like
the Gillman just grabbed a whole friggin' tree and pulled it in there.
Well, he's strong. I mean, you know, so he put as much... It's a pretty good round tree.
And it's probably more than that boat's going to be able to lift.
No, yeah.
So... David's down there doing that. Mark is down there with the spear gun, and sure as shit that you know the Gill man tries to come after him.
Okay.
And yeah, they shoot him with the spear gun, you know, which I think they miss him.
Right in his back.
Did they hit him this time? I don't even remember if they hit him the second time, but
yeah, I think you're right. They didn't the second time,
and
because they end up having a struggle between Mark and the Gill man.
Right, and he's gonna kill him.
And the funny thing is, you would think that the Gill man would be able to swim faster, more agile.
I don't know.
But they're both fighting like men.
Yeah, I guess.
Underneath the water, like, take that, punch you in the face. I know, I'm cutting this movie plenty of slack.
No, I am too.
I mean, it looks great.
And
he does end up getting speared again.
Yep.
Right in his stomach.
In the gut, like right where your spleen would
be. So, I mean, he's getting it left and right here, and he's...
And you guys, you gotta watch this film, and you gotta see how great the costume is. No seams, no... Swamp thing, wrinkles, no.
Oh my god!
Zippers like on the Ewoks.
That's excellent,
you know.
Comparison, Swamp Thing to this.
Yeah,
is there any comparison?
I mean, Swamp Thing, you could see the creases when.
Not that we didn't like the Swamp Thing, but
no,
when you come
I
to
love Swamp Thing,
yeah, but when you come to, I know you like Swamp Thing.
Adrian Barbeau.
Double Day Tapas.
I remember seeing that on cable when I was a kid. And just, like, my mom wasn't around.
Lord.
It was PG. I was allowed to watch it.
Ted was watching under the blankets.
And, yeah, there's, like, a booby scene. And I'm like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know, I got a little, you know, tingle down below. And I didn't really understand why. You know, I was, like, 8 years old.
Anyways, yeah. they end up fighting and all
yes,
that.
Yes, there's a struggle. Mark's not going to make it.
No. Mark dies. Poor guy.
I like it. Like, with his mouth, he just basically rips off his oxygen tubes and everything.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
His tubes.
And Dave is going to eventually, like we said, just keeps shooting him with that stuff that's supposed to sedate him and all that, right?
They will eventually clear out the tree.
Mm-hmm.
The creature's going to... Yeah, he is going to get his hands on Kay and take her back to his lair, his cave lair.
Yes.
And that's where, you know, David will confront the creature and Carl's with him, the guy who originally found the fossil. And, you know, they'll unload a couple of shotguns on him and save the day. They save Kay.
In a classic scene with him all shot up, he just floats to the bottom of the lagoon.
You think maybe he's dead, but you know he will return in Revenge of the Creature.
Yes,
which I actually just watched today too, just because I got so into watching this, I wanted to watch the second one.
Yeah,
which I hadn't seen in ages, and we were talking about how the creature actually has a pretty kind of interesting arc throughout all three. For instance, just not going to go a big long thing on the sequels.
No big tirade.
Because I don't know that we would do the sequels to these.
Yeah. We hit the original here.
In the second one, in Revenge of the Creature, it's a different group of scientists coming back to the Black Lagoon, but it's the same boat driver, Lucas, and it's the Rita 2.
Yeah.
And it's a different boat.
Mm.
And
the Rita 2. Same captain, though.
Yeah, the exact same captain, same actor.
Love it.
And they do manage to capture the creature from Black Lagoon. He is still alive. So it's ambiguous at the end here, I guess, whether he's absolutely dead.
Well, they capture evidently he's not.
And they bring him to Florida.
Unless he's a different creature.
No, it's the same one. Same one. Because they... You know,
maybe he's immortal.
I don't think he's immortal.
Well, I mean, there's only one of them, and he's come back that he didn't die, so...
Maybe.
He could be vampiric.
I think he could just take a lick
you
and
think
keep
he's
on
a vampire?
Him. No.
No?
No.
Hmm. And an aquatic vampire, nope, I heard from some of the forums.
And, you know, this creature, this whole idea for this movie...
Yeah.
We were talking about this before the mic went out. Was one of the producers of this film back in the maybe 10 years or so, whenever the film came out, I can't remember, was at, I think, the rap party for Citizen Kane, Orson Welles. And someone there was talking about...
Yeah, he was at the rap party, P. Diddy.
P. Diddy's rap party. And someone was talking about this story of a Brazilian, you know, aquatic man... half fish, half man, and it stuck with this producer, and they eventually wrote the story. But I get the feeling, I get a lot of Lovecraft out of the Black Lagoon creature.
Right.
He certainly...
A lot of his underwater
Lovecraft definitely wrote stories, you know, Dagon and the old gods and
mermaids.
Plenty
and
of stories of aquatic-type creatures like this. So a little bit of that creeps into this, too, which I think is neat.
You said creep.
Creep.
You're such a creep.
And oh, I'm sorry, but in Revenge of the Creature, they put him on display in Florida in like a SeaWorld kind of place. They're trying to train him and all this jazz.
And they're still good movies. I mean,
oh, they're all fantastic.
I mean,
yeah,
but I mean,
if anything, you see more of the creature in the second one.
Yeah,
and of course, you know, he busts loose, goes, you know, ape
he
shit
busts
town.
Loose. And, like King Kong.
You know,
the
they eventually
loose.
Same. It ends the exact same way as the first one. They shoot him a couple times, and I think it's the same scene. It's like in the Florida Bayou, whatever,
where he's floating back down.
Yeah, floating down. And then in the third one, he, you know, pops up. I think he scares some kids. They burn him.
Yeah.
Some scientists manage to rescue him, and through surgery, through the magic of surgery, basically
science
make him more human. Than amphibian. And so the creature himself has to deal with being human, being more human now, but also dealing with being, you know,
because this is
the
where,
feelings of what he was.
Right. And that's where they get the classic 50s, like he's sitting down there drinking his coffee and smoking a cigarette.
I think you even have I think you got a little toy from him over there too, up in the front where he's dressed in clothes.
Oh yeah, I do.
Yeah, and that's from that film. It's from the Creature Walks Among Us. That's the
third my one. Creature from the Black Lagoon new figure.
Oh yes, this line here. What is it? What did we say?
Reaction.
You can find these at all the toy stores now and Barnes
and
Noble.
They're pricey, like $10. $10 for, you know, that,
but like
little,
every movie's got them.
They're cool though.
You named Star Trek. They don't have Star Wars. They have Star Trek, Alien. The Alien figure look kind of cool. Gremlins,
they do.
Boondock Saints, Firefly, Buffy.
Ugh.
Man, just about any movie you can think of.
They're making money off of that.
Back to the Future.
$10 a pop for that. But
yeah, action figures are ridiculously priced now. But those are kind of cool. I like those. I don't have them, but I would. But I know they make a black and white set as well. And I'd like the black and white set. That would look kind of neat.
But they were
better figures, you know, back in the, I think maybe the early 2000s or the 90s when you and I were collecting
them. Right, yeah.
I mean, I remember you bought me, I think for my birthday or something, a mummy. I still have it somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Boris Karloff, the mummy, was about that high. And yeah, he came with the scroll and the tablets and everything.
Yeah.
And he was the only one out of the Universal.
Was it the McFarlane?
Or wasn't it McFarlane?
Oh, no, it was the Universal.
It was Universal.
That's right.
It was Universal.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was the only one I got out of that whole set. But all of them were great.
Oh, they all looked great. Yeah, mm-hmm. That was cool. And I tell you, the Universal Monster movies, the movies back in the 40s, 50s, even early 60s, we were talking about this earlier, how the monsters always, the victim always made it so easy for them to get captured or killed.
They did.
So, I mean, it was almost Ed Wood-ish. You know, I mean,
door right there,
and the victim could be there, and he would work his way away from the door into a corner so that the monster would come over, trap them and then eat them, scratch them, whatever.
Still happens in modern
even movies. In this Creature from the Black Lagoon, when the scientists are away and the couple tribesmen are there, whatever.
They're
in a tent like there, and they're going
Gilman
through stuff.
The Gilman attacks the tribes.
Gilman walks up, you know, and they don't run away like, oh my god, there's two guys in the tent.
He attacks one, the other one's still laying there.
They don't even show the second one.
Right.
Until after he kills that first one.
You're like, there's another guy there?
Yeah, and he's going, oh my god. I'm wondering what the heck he was doing while he was destroying and killing the first guy.
I mean,
you know, it's just easy kills for the monsters and whatnot in these movies back then. So, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just... But... It's what I love about it.
But this one's definitely a cut above the rest.
Oh, no.
With the quality of the costume.
Quality.
Basically, the quality of the costume and the underwater photography.
And even the acting ain't bad. I mean,
it's stock for the period, I think.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's no better, no worse than anything I've seen.
No.
I'm not watching it for the people anyway. I'm not watching it for the acting.
Right, right.
Some of the others, you know, Frankenstein and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
But... I love all these, you know, this was the last of the Universal Monsters. He's the last one to join the club.
Yep.
You know, he's the ones that you don't see included in the club too much are Lon Chaney from Hunchback of Notre Dame. And you do see Phantom of the Opera, but Hunchback of Notre Dame, I think, was actually, you know, I think that was the first one.
Yeah. You're going
Quasimodo,
way back. Like we said, yeah.
To the silence. But the producer who did the Dracula and the Mummy and all that, Carl Laemmle, he was involved in those films. You know, those are the silent Phantom of the Opera, the silent Hunchback of Notre Dame are Universal films. They're from Universal Studios.
Mm-hmm.
So they do belong in the canon. You just don't see them, like, you know, on the t-shirts.
Right, yeah.
You know, we've got a picture up here. You can't see it, but it's got...
Yeah.
It does have the Phantom of the Opera on there, so I'm glad.
Phantom of the Opera.
So it's good that he's on there.
Dracula.
You know, but, you know... And then they left the Claude Rains version of Phantom of the Opera off, which is... It's a horrible movie.
It is, yeah.
I mean...
No, it's... I agree. I mean, and not everyone was a masterpiece, but...
Except for that one, I love them all.
Yeah.
But that was like a musical in color. But yeah, I like that there's, you know, with at least with the Creature films, there's continuity among the three. With the Mummy films, there's continuity among... There was like five Mummy movies, including the original. And there's continuity amongst most of them.
Yep.
But what I really like, and I think we've mentioned before, is that if you watch the, you know, the original Dracula, Frankenstein, Wolfman...
Mm-hmm.
And their sequels, in the order that they came out, it's all one big movie. It was the first cinematic universe.
Yes.
I mean, because usually they pick up...
The Marvel universe right now.
Right.
I mean, yeah, they all picked up. And I think that's what they're trying to do with the new universe.
Yeah, so, the Mummy's the next one to come out, so we'll see.
We'll see.
But they're getting big name actors in these films. That doesn't always translate to a good movie.
Yeah, I'm not going
but
to.
But they're attracting big names to it. I'd rather they put the money in story and not actors, you know.
Right.
Whereas, you know, back then, you know, script was important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you had to have a good story. You know, none of these studios were going to back you and make a movie unless you had a good story. Now it seems like story is kind of like the afterthought. You know, we'll make it work.
We've gone over this time and time again. Yeah, I don't get it. But, you know, it's just to make a money, you know.
Make a big opening weekend where, you know, the theater doesn't really get much of the take. Hollywood gets most of the take. And
a lot of the good
And everybody
movies,
rushes to go see those movies the first weekend.
And a lot of the good movies that are out there that are independent don't get backing
there's plenty of
to
good
get
movies.
Their support, you know. So,
we're fortunate around here. We have an art house chain, you know, Cleveland Cinemas, the Capitol Theater, and the Cedar Lee Theater and Shaker Square.
And you'll get some of the more independent,
especially Cedar Lee,
obscure movies.
You know, where that's all they show.
Yeah.
You know, so you'll get those. And if you want to see them, that's where you can go see them.
Yeah.
You know, but...
I think we're going to start heading towards some of these older Universals movies.
These are the treasures, and... You know, this is where you got to start, you know.
Yep.
You're a big horror fan, you want to build your horror collection.
Go back to the black and whites, man.
There's nothing like watching these.
With the lights off, in the dark, black and white, up on a screen. I mean, it doesn't get any better than
right.
that. It's just,
Frankenstein, Island of Lost Souls, The Mummy, Wolfman.
Yes.
And like I said, you know, you can watch the whole first cinematic universe if you just watch those three and their sequels.
Yep.
Like Dracula's Daughter, the second one picks up right at the moment where Dracula ends.
Oh, yeah.
And a lot of the, you know, even though the title might be different, like Son of Dracula or Son of Frankenstein, it always picks up where the previous monster movie left off.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes different actors are playing the same characters.
Right. But the storyline continues. But
the storyline continues. That's what's kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then you can jump into the Abbott and Costello ones. They did a whole series of monster ones. They're silly, but...
I love them. Yep. I love them. We may even do one. Who knows?
Yeah, might as well do the classic Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein.
There you go.
That's the best one out of the bunch.
Heck yeah. No, so
a little,
for sure.
A little bit of a shorter, I guess, podcast today just because of a little snafu on our part.
Yeah, so whatever.
We're assuming you should know this movie by heart like we do.
Yeah.
But we just kind of wanted to gush on how great this movie is for a while.
Yes.
And
You
know, in a way, this kind of maybe worked out a little bit better than a normal, like, long hour and a half podcast in a way.
Yeah, it was all right.
I think we still condensed everything into this amount of time.
So. We did. We did.
There was just no filler.
No filler.
There you go. 45 minutes and no filler.
Yeah. So there you go. Creature from the Black Lagoon this week. And we're going to continue on this little Universal tirade here.
Just not sure which one yet. I don't know if we'll work our way backwards or just pick whichever one we want.
Whichever one. We'll figure it out. We'll let you know.
Okay.
Please be sure to share. It helps us out big time. All you got to do is go down there and where the share button is, you get to Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most popular. Just hit it. It takes 1 second.
It
makes 1 second.
It.
I can see who's helping me share our podcast and our show, our horror show. And, I'd like to get, you know, we're only a little after a year into this. I'd like to see us grow a little bit more. I can care less.
We're better than all those others.
I can care less if we do, but you know, I'd like to.
We're better.
Broaden our horizon.
Best horror movie podcast this day, this time slot.
Well, we've got a couple awards coming up soon.
We're going
to the ESPYs and
The BET Award.
Late August and the BET Awards in September.
We're up for that.
So
that's really going to throw them for a loop.
Yeah,
but we're going to put on blackface when we go up on the stage, so you know, no one will know.
Hey, Amos! So that's it. Until next time, I guess we're not going to end with no music because of that opening sequence you got.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to just let it go here and see you guys later. Until next week.
Mess up the microphone again.
No. Later, guys.
Watch your monster movies.